Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by becoming a congregational sponsor. When your church pledges $1,000, we'll publicize your congregation on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Learn more on the support donate page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Become an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor in 2020.
This is from your LGBTQ plan, and here's what you write. This is a quote. Freedom of religion is a fundamental right, but it should not be used to discriminate. Do you think religious institutions like colleges, churches, charities, should they lose their tax-exempt status if they oppose same-sex marriage?
Yes. There can be no reward, no benefit, no tax break for anyone or any institution, any organization in America that denies the full human rights and the full civil rights of every single one of us. And so as president, we're going to make that a priority, and we are going to stop those who are infringing upon the human rights of our fellow Americans.
That's Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke and CNN's Don Lemon speaking at last week's LGBTQ town hall. Well, he came out and said it. He doesn't believe that churches or other religious organizations should get a tax break any longer if they continue to oppose same-sex marriage, as he says, not grant them their full rights. What do you do with that when what many people suspected, some of the progressives in politics and elsewhere believed already quietly in their hearts, now they're simply coming out and saying it and being applauded on national television? Welcome back to Issues Etc. We're going to talk about these comments from Beto O'Rourke and why we probably all should have seen this coming a long time ago. Pastor Hans Feeney joins us. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire. He's senior contributor to The Federalist and author of a recent column titled Hiding Behind the Supreme Court Won't Stop Beto O'Rourke's Crusade to Punish Orthodox Religion. Hans, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Should anyone be surprised to hear at least one of these candidates, in this case, Beto O'Rourke, say that if churches will not affirm same-sex marriage, they should lose their tax-exempt status?
I don't think anyone should be surprised in a general sense. I think that perhaps it's fair to be surprised that people were willing to say it out loud at this point. But no, it shouldn't be surprising at all because as I talk about in the article, it's just very simply the logical progression of thought, and it's the logical end of the presuppositions that the left has been making with regard to its view of homosexuality and LGBTQ issues, where it's very firmly established the view that homosexuality is good, that the state has a vested interest in defending it and protecting it. And therefore, the logical conclusion of that should be that those who persist in criticizing it and refusing to acknowledge its goodness should in some way, shape, or form be hindered or punished by the government. That's a very logical conclusion of say, if you say that this thing is good and the state has a vested interest in protecting it, then it's the natural conclusion to say, therefore, we should hinder those who are speaking against it.
You are not saying that this Supreme Court, as it's currently comprised, would allow churches to be stripped of their tax-exempt status for not supporting same-sex marriage.
Right. Yeah, not in this particular makeup of the Supreme Court. But I think an important thing for people to realize is that courts change, and courts change very rapidly according to social pressure. That kind of the bullying aspect of the LGBTQ movement isn't just simply limited to individuals in, you know, flower shops and bakeries and things of that nature, but it does also have a very strong effect on the mindsets of various judges and how they view the law. And one of the things I talk about in the article, I don't quite go into specific detail about it, but just to kind of speak about it for a moment, it's not terribly hard to see how this would play out. So, of course, the makeup that we have now would say that that Beto O'Rourke's plan would be an unconstitutional action. But what the Supreme Court has done previously, the precedent that they've set is basically using the 14th Amendment to trump the 10th Amendment. This is what they did in Roe versus Wade. This is also what they did in Obergefell, which is, so the 10th Amendment is the amendment which basically states that whatever is not explicitly given to the federal government, it belongs to states. So in theory, that should be laws with regard to murder, laws with regard to regulating marriage contracts, laws with regard to abortion and things of that nature. But the 14th Amendment is the amendment that guarantees equal protection under the law. And so it basically states that all citizens have the right to equal protection under the law. And therefore, if you want to legislate from the bench, all you need to do is you need to invent a right that people have and then say, based off of the 14th Amendment, that trumps everything. So states can't pass laws forbidding X, Y, and Z because it violates this fundamental right that you just made up. So that's what Roe versus Wade did when it invented out of nothing the right to privacy. And because women have a right to privacy, state laws that outlaw abortion are therefore contrary to that fundamental right. And by virtue of the 14th Amendment, they are therefore declared unconstitutional. They did the same thing with regard in Obergefell, where they said, because we have invented the right to marry the person that you desire, that therefore any state law that prohibits same-sex couples from marrying the person that they want to marry, states are therefore not allowed to do that according to the 14th Amendment, because that would be infringing upon basically an equal application of the law. Well, in the same way, all you have to do to basically find constitutional grounds for destroying dissenting churches through the power of the tax is to simply say people have the right to have their identity recognized. It's not fundamentally different than what Justice Kennedy did in the Obergefell reading, where he basically said one of the reasons we have to legalize gay marriage is because it brings harm to the children of same-sex couples, as though that's actually a thing that exists. But it brings harm to the children of same-sex couples who are being taught and being told that the relationship that their parents have is somehow lesser and that they are therefore lesser. So kind of by that same logic, you could say, well, it brings people harm. It causes them to spiral into depression, supposedly, when the world around them won't acknowledge their identity and won't acknowledge the goodness of that. So your right to have a clean conscience is a fundamental right that you have, and therefore any kind of state action that props up organizations that speak against that and that fill your conscience with guilt, those are practices or those are laws which therefore would be contrary to the 14th Amendment. So there's certainly a very clear trajectory that you can follow on this, and we should recognize that if we don't fight back against this, the culture will become much more comfortable with the idea of punishing dissenting religious organizations, and that as the culture becomes more comfortable seeing it that way, future Supreme Court justices and perhaps even Supreme Court justices who are already on the bench now could very well come to alter their understanding of the law to accommodate that.
And you point out in your piece that it's not as though the brighter of legal minds didn't see this coming. In fact, even 16 years ago, in a dissent, I believe, Antonin Scalia wrote to Lawrence v. Texas. He, in effect, predicted this trajectory. What did he say?
Yeah, so I quote that in my piece, and he said, one of the benefits of leaving regulation of this matter, he's talking about sodomy laws, to the people rather than to the courts is that the people, unlike judges, need not carry things to their logical conclusion. The people may feel that their disapprobation of homosexual conduct is strong enough to disallow homosexual marriage, but not strong enough to criminalize private homosexual acts, and may legislate accordingly. The court today pretends that it possesses a similar freedom of action, so that we need not fear judicial imposition of homosexual marriage. And he goes on to describe that a little bit more, and he says, do not believe it. So in other words, he's saying the state, and in particular the courts, cannot remain essentially neutral on the question of what homosexuality is, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing. It's just simply within the nature of the state, and especially within the nature of courts, to either say that something is good and should be endorsed and supported by the state, or that it's bad and should be inhibited by the state. So in other words, private individuals are perfectly capable of leaving that intention, and they're able even to pass laws that kind of leave a little bit of that tension there, to just say, well, we don't like this thing enough to make it illegal, but we don't hate it so much that it's worth throwing people in jail over it. People are able to do that. Courts aren't. And when at the moment that the court says that the state does not have a vested interest in saying that homosexuality is wrong, the court is putting itself on the path to say that homosexuality is good. And that only took 12 years for the Supreme Court to get to that very point. So the Supreme Court's exercise in trying to remain neutral on the question of whether homosexuality was wrong or right lasted 12 years.
Pastor Hans Feeney is our guest. We're talking about Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke on church and tax-exempt status. Moving from the courts to the movement itself, was this the unspoken goal all along? Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by becoming a congregational sponsor. When your church pledges $1,000, we'll publicize your congregation on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Learn more on the support donate page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Become an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor in 2020.
What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's a monthly magazine on faith and life, theology and culture that helps readers interpret the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective. Filled with expert insights, good writing, and inspiring stories, it also provides essential church information for LCMS members. What is the Lutheran Witness? Simple. It's the flagship periodical of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, and it has been for more than a century. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today.
If you're looking for a good Lutheran church in Scarsdale, New York, one that has sound teaching based on the Word of God and takes pride in the confessions, look no further than Trinity Lutheran Church in Scarsdale, New York, where every Sunday morning at 9 a.m. we have Bible study and Sunday school, followed by the service at 10. Again, good liturgical confessional worship. By the grace of God, find us at trinityscarsdale.org.
Discover a truly Lutheran approach to education. Concordia University Chicago's Center for the Advancement of Lutheran Liberal Arts supports a vibrant, growing community of classical educators. Whether you're a teacher, administrator, parent, or homeschooler, we have the resources and contacts you need to start a child's journey into the Lutheran Liberal Arts. Visit cuchicago.edu/calla. That's C-A-L-L-A.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our school is committed to authentic Lutheranism, the entire Book of Concord, and indeed to authentic Lutheranism as it has continued to be confessed and practiced through the centuries right up into our own time.
Dr. Cameron McKenzie, chairman of the Department of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
We're committed then to biblical, confessional Christianity and Lutheranism and applying it to the world of today in as effective a way as we can.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu, ctsfw.edu, or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Pastor Hans Feeney, senior contributor to The Federalist, about Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke on church and tax-exempt status. Hans, we talked about the courts. Let's talk a little bit about the broader movement. Was this the progressive goal all along?
Yeah, no, I think absolutely that the one of the things the left has understood, I'm not sure that they always understand it as well now, because they in many ways seem to be growing a bit more impatient. That may just be kind of the effect of viewing things through the lens of social media. But one of the things that the left has understood fairly well is that you just simply make incremental gains. So all you have to do is convince people that you're being reasonable today and that you're just asking for room to kind of exist. And you can generally convince people because most Americans want to get along. Most Americans want to be friendly. They want to just sort of give people the freedom to live their lives the way that they want to. So it's very easy to understand how it is that people could look at sodomy laws and say, well, that's ridiculous. You don't want the government coming into your bedroom determining what kind of relationships you have and how you express yourself sexually or things of that nature. It's a view that I think a lot of people would sympathize with. But of course, then the thing is that the moment you go from saying, well, the state shouldn't come into your private life, you say, okay, well, we all kind of agree with that. But then the problem is that once you allow people to enter into the public square in that arena, then you have this tension, as I kind of talk about in the piece, of, well, how do you deal with the kind of the question of live and let live when the stuff that we've now said it's okay to do in the privacy of your own home brings itself into the public square? You know, so for example, like on the issue of debates about transgender bathroom bills and things of that nature, when you say, okay, we're going to pass a law saying that you have to use the bathroom that corresponds with your biological sex, because this is a problem of you having biological men who identify as women, who dress as women, showing up in women's bathrooms, and that's making the biological women who are in there profoundly uncomfortable, you know, to have some guy who's 6'4" with hairy arms showing up in a very intimate place like that. And so I think that kind of brings you to the next sort of generation of problems, which is there's a mess that occurs there. And so how do you propose to solve that mess? And progressives are always willing to answer that question, and conservatives aren't. So again, like with the bathroom bill, you say, okay, well, how do you solve that problem? Because you actually can't really solve it entirely by saying only biological males they have to use the men's bathroom, or that biological females have to use the women's bathroom. Because, well, what do you do if you have a man who identifies as a woman, who's had various surgeries, and who's done a pretty darn good job of appearing to be female? Well, if I'm in the bathroom, with my sons, and that guy is coming into the bathroom, that doesn't necessarily solve the problem. So progressives have a solution to that mess, which is to say that I'm a bigot, that if I own a business that I need to be forced to accommodate the needs of the transgender people, that everyone who refuses to acknowledge their identity is harming them, and therefore they should be dissuaded through some measure of force in doing that. Now, I obviously don't remotely agree with that approach, but it does propose a solution for solving the mess of how we kind of live together as a society. What the conservative position certainly ought to be is you pass laws saying that if you're a biological male, you're not allowed to go out in public dressed like a female, and vice versa. But of course, because that scene is so radical now, and because it's seen as such a harsh position, conservatives are by and large not willing to put forth a solution like that. And so what happens is you have this big mass of people who are kind of undecided on the issue, and they're naturally going to side with the only group that actually offers any kind of solution to the problem, even if they don't necessarily think that's the best solution that there is. So as long as conservatives just simply refuse to follow our logic to its conclusion, that's the position we're going to be in. I gave another example in the piece of, so at the same event that I'm talking about with Beto O'Rourke's comments about taxing churches, Elizabeth Warren had a question asked of her by I can't remember which way it was, but a 9-year-old transgender boy, so a biological female who goes to school, dresses a male, wants to be referred to in male pronouns, you know, his mother is by his side cheering him on, and there Elizabeth Warren is, you know, lauding this young child for her bravery. You know, she's obviously going to be using the appropriate pronouns and things of that nature. And you may see this, you know, every now and then on Twitter with conservative writers or just conservative people. But from a governmental standpoint, you don't have a loud voice in conservative movements and in Republican government saying that mother needs to have her child removed from her care for abusing her, by assisting and aiding her in this delusion that she is, in fact, male because she feels that way. That not just pointing to that and saying, if we actually believe, as we say, that transgenderism is not a legitimate identity, but the result of some form of mental illness, some form of something going wrong in your brain, then we ought to follow that logic to its conclusion and say, therefore, we should use the power of the government to hinder people who exacerbate that mental anguish and those mental problems. You know, whether it's parents who are encouraging children to do this, whether it is doctors that are prescribing, you know, puberty blockers and things of that nature. And if we're not willing to say that, then we're not giving people a compelling reason to actually accept our primary principle that what we're dealing with here is something that is immoral and hurtful and harmful.
We're discussing Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke on churches and tax-exempt status. Our guest is Pastor Hans Feeney. He's pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois, creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, contributor to The Federalist, and author of a recent column titled Hiding Behind the Supreme Court Won't Stop Beto O'Rourke's Crusade to Punish Orthodox Religion. Pastor Feeney is also a 2008 graduate of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, where they form servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Learn more about studying for the vocations of pastor or deaconess at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana. We'll turn to our fellow pastors, fellow Lutheran pastors in particular, who often espouse the live and let live policy, political quietists, suddenly becoming activists when it comes to church tax-exempt status.
Church music directors can find a new community at Prelude to Postlude, the CPH music blog. Learn helpful tips for managing music ministry and involving members, and meet the composers of some of your favorite new pieces. Plus, find suggestions of music to use for special services, and preview some of our newest works with free samples you can use at your church. Visit us at preludetopostlude.org.
You know what lasts forever? God's Word. Everything else fails, but not His Word. It holds and delivers exactly what He promises. His Word is so solid and lasting, you can build your life and hope of eternity on it. Join me, Pastor Will Wheaton, for The Word of the Lord Endures Forever, a daily, verse-by-verse Bible study with the church, past and present. It all starts Reformation Day, October 31st. Learn more at thewordendures.org.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive word and sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is, lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's Classical Christian Curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most.
click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Pastor Hans Feeney about Democratic presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke on churches and tax-exempt status. I have noticed among some of our fellow Lutheran pastors a kind of quietist tendency when it comes to matters that they consider political, but in this case, they consider church tax-exempt status obviously something that is not political. This kind of live-and-let-live attitude falls away, and they suddenly convert to political activism when their congregation's tax-exempt status is potentially threatened. How do you explain this, Hans?
Yeah, I think for most people, they try to stay out of a fight until it becomes clear to them that they have to get involved or things are going to get ugly for them personally. So people tend to not, you know, this is oftentimes, I mean, you see this very clearly in various causes that celebrities will pick up, you know, various charities that they support, which is, and I don't mean this as a criticism, but that they don't come to support that charity until they get diagnosed with a condition or someone that they love gets diagnosed with a condition, you know, and things of that nature. And we're all kind of that way. So I think for probably a lot of Lutheran pastors, Lutherans have a very strong tradition of being apolitical and of saying that unless the scriptures have spoken clearly on something, Christians are, we need to be united in the common principles of love of God and love of our neighbor, but we certainly have broad room to disagree about the best way to serve our neighbor in a political sense. So we know the Bible tells us to pay our taxes. It doesn't tell us a specific tax rate. The Bible tells us to care for the poor and the sick and the lowly, but we're free to disagree whether or not the best way to accomplish that is through, you know, private action versus state action and things of that nature. So it's kind of contrary to the Lutheran heritage to want to get involved in politics. It's just not a place where we naturally fit. And that's certainly a respectable thing, but one of the things that I think Lutheran pastors need to recognize, and really that everyone needs to recognize, is again, you have to follow logic to its conclusion, and you have to realize that if this is the approach that a certain group is taking, they're not going to stop marching halfway down the road and set up their town there. They're going to just naturally follow things to its conclusion. And you see this with all sorts of issues. You see this with how the Democratic Party has become increasingly supportive of late-term abortions and things of that nature. So I think the reality is what happens is eventually people begin to realize that, as I said, kind of, you know, the enemy army didn't decide that they were just going to stop conquering land, you know, 10 feet before your front door. And what Beto O'Rourke's comments have made quite clear is that, you know, one of the things I think is important for Christians to remember is we are only free to remain as apolitical as the state lets us. So if the state is going to stay out of the business of churches, if the state is going to abide by certain parameters, then we don't need to weigh in one way or another. But the second that the state says, you are now our enemy, and we have decided that we are going to punish and harm you, you don't have the freedom to remain silent about that. And we certainly should have realized that the groundwork of this was being laid a long time ago. But I'm at least glad if people are waking up and now realizing that the time has come to fight more. And it would have been great to have people enlisted in this a little bit earlier on, but I'm happy to find allies when we can.
Someone might respond, look, this is, we're safer now because we have a Supreme Court that's likely either to do as little harm as possible or maybe even issue a ruling in favor of churches, synagogues, and mosques and their freedom of conscience along with their tax-exempt status. How would you respond to that?
Well, yeah, I think, again, it's important to remember that, and this is something that Scalia talks about in his dissent in Lawrence versus Texas, where he basically says the court doesn't have any consistency when it comes to the concept of, I don't know how to pronounce the Latin, stare decisis or however it's pronounced.
Stare decisis.
Basically the idea. There we go. So basically the idea that the court has already ruled on this and we're trusting the precedent of earlier court rulings. So, you know, there are times when we say, no, this court ruling definitely got things wrong, but you want those to be few and far between. That's at least kind of the general concept of the thing. But one of the things that Scalia points out is there's no consistency in the Supreme Court's application of that principle, and certainly not among the left. So the way that progressives view the court is that the Supreme Court is the most powerful tool for accomplishing broad-reaching social upheaval. And that's how it is that they are using it. And we shouldn't remotely expect that because we currently have a favorable court now that might rule in our favor now. That doesn't mean that if a few justices die and a new president gets elected and or a president just decides to add more, you know, to stack the Supreme Court, whatever the possibilities are, it doesn't mean that, that any of those things are safe, that the battle continues and we still need to be a part of it.
You reference a debate that's actually taking place among Roman Catholics, David French being one of the most prominent debaters there. They're talking about these things, and they're kind of seesawing back and forth between, do we let the Constitution do its job, or do we become more aggressive? Do we take the game to the opponents, in this case, the proponents of the sexual revolution? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, well, not to correct you, but I believe that David French is a Calvinist, which for the but the fellow the so Rob Amari, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing his name, is a Roman Catholic, which I think is kind of a part of that whole issue. Yeah, I think that we need to recognize, as I say in the piece, that you don't win cultural battles and you don't protect your own house and your own institutions by having a philosophy that says we don't really fight until we get dragged to the courthouse steps. Because when that's the case, you're always going to be on your heels. And I think this is something that we're seeing with this growing voice on the left, with this idea that we ought to tax churches, is you shouldn't expect people, if your position is, we don't really want to fight, we'll just kind of wait until we get dragged to court and then we'll take this particular lawsuit and hope that we win. Well, there are people whose livelihoods don't have 5 years to wait, you know, to kind of figure that stuff out. And likewise, if you are essentially doing that, you're taking the position where you're saying that we as Christians ought to have the right to be bigots. So please preserve our right to be bigots in our houses of worship, and please protect our right to be bigots in our businesses that we run. We have a constitutional right to be bigots. So we're almost kind of conceding far too much to the opposition, because eventually the culture will just say, no, we don't want anyone to be allowed to be bigots. We have to actually make the argument that not only are we not bigoted, but that those who are pushing this agenda are actually hurting and harming the people that they purport to be defending. And this is something that I think especially has gotten lost in the debate on gay marriage, for example, is how utterly physically, psychologically destructive sodomy is. And if we actually were, as conservatives, if we were willing to actually have a conversation about that, we would do a lot more good in establishing in the minds of the public that we are not actually bigoted because we don't want people to do things that are harmful to them and harmful to the people that they are involved with.
We had mentioned those fellow Lutheran pastors a moment ago. What would you say to one of them who says, look, I'm sticking by my guns. It's live and let live. Unless they come in, we'll pay the property taxes. We'll pay the taxes we have to pay. As long as they don't come in and tell me I can't preach the gospel, I don't care. What would you say?
Well, the whole point is they will, because you can't, and they're already doing that, because the whole point is if the position of the state is you may not without penalty preach against homosexuality or any other LGBTQ issue, then they've put you in a position where you can't preach forgiveness to those people. You can't forgive the sins that you haven't called people to repent of. You can't apply the gospel where you have not first applied the law. So if our position is going to be, I'm not going to be involved in this and I'm going to just kind of stick with my guns and wait until they tell me that I can't say Jesus died for your sins, the second they tell you you can't say these things are sins without punishment, they're telling you that you can't preach that Jesus died for those sins. And that is an attack on the gospel. And I think I would also say that positions like that are, I think, a helpful diagnostic tool would be, if you were a coward but didn't want to admit that you were a coward, how would you piously justify your cowardice? And if the answer is, I would say exactly the thing that I have just said, that's not a good sign. Doesn't necessarily mean that you're a coward, but if you're speaking the words that cowards would speak, It's a bad place to be. So we ought to put ourselves in a position where we recognize that our members need us to speak clearly about this, our neighbors need us to speak clearly about this, and that we need to be enlisted in the fight to protect and defend congregations that wouldn't be able to survive that kind of government hostility. So the taxing churches would shut down a huge percentage of congregations. And the more congregations we have preaching the gospel, the better things will be. We need to be really careful about these kind of persecution fantasies. It would not remotely be better for Christians in the United States if 90% of our congregations closed down. So we need to recognize we have a moral and Christian obligation to help and defend our neighbors, to help and to do everything we can to protect the preaching of the gospel. And the time, as Beto O'Rourke has shown, the time has been here for quite some time when we all need to be enlisted in that fight.
Pastor Hans Feeney is pastor of River of Life Lutheran Church in Shanahan, Illinois. He is creator of a series of comical videos called Lutheran Satire, and he's senior contributor to The Federalist, author of a recent column there titled Hiding Behind the Supreme Court Won't Stop Beto O'Rourke's Crusade to Punish Orthodox Religion. You'll find a link to it on the Talk on Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Hans, thanks.
My pleasure.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll look forward to the Feast and Festival of James of Jerusalem, brother of Jesus and martyr, with Pastor David Peterson of Gottesdienst, and we'll talk with Terry Mattingly of Get Religion about media coverage of religion. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
College Preparation Station is proud to announce the opening of its first Missouri location, Creve Coeur. College Preparation Station provides ACT, SAT, PSAT instruction, and college scholarship guidance. Their new Creve Coeur branch is located at 11,500 Olive Boulevard. Learn more at cpsprep.com or call 314-750-5967. College Preparation Station in Creve Coeur, Missouri, and Maryville, Illinois. cpsprep.com.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.
Would you like to learn about the Reformation theology you hear on Issues Etc.? We'll send you a pamphlet of Luther's Small Catechism for free. It contains the biblical teachings on the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, baptism, the Lord's Supper, and confession and absolution. Order your free copy of Luther's Small Catechism today. Just send your name and mailing address to talkback@issuesetc.org.